listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Howling time with a wide trip so far, chasing time with five lengths to make up and a quarter mile to go. They're off the turn, back to normal, turning for home. In front by two. Letty's full out. Osborne comes on through. Howling time is there. Chasing time switched way outside for the final furlong and down toward the rail. It's Brondo. Back to normal as to fend off Howling time. Here comes Howling time surging late. Howling time takes the lead now. Back to normal gives way. Osborne up the rail, but Howling time's won it. Howling time from off the pace by length and a half in the end. Osborne was second. His fight for third. Back to normal for chasing time. Farther back from there, I'm a warlord of Brondo.
How's that for a little spooky beginning? You know, as we ended last week's show, Dale Romans mentioned that he would be saddling a horse on Halloween, tomorrow, who just might be the greatest hunchbet of all time. That is his two-year-old son of Not This Time, out of a mare, get this, named Werewolf. His name, you just heard, is Howling Time, and he is running tomorrow in the Street Sense Stakes at Churchill. That will be his second career start after that maiden-breaking win that you just heard from Travis Stone. And don't forget, a few weeks ago, Wilkin was talking about seeing a ghost in his house. So that seems like the perfect way to welcome you to a Halloween edition of I Ask, They Answer with trainer Dale Romans, turf writer Tim Wilkin. And guys, I'm going to tell you, we're going to have a lot of fun talking about some Halloween topics later in the show, but I'm going to kick it off and start with a couple of questions that we received from HRN listeners this week. And here's topic one. HRN Nation wants to know, who was the first horse to catch your attention and make you guys fall in love with the sport? Dale, why don't you kick it off for us?
Well, that's a tough one for me because I don't remember seeing the first horse. Like I told you all once before, my mother said when she took me in the barn, I was 9 months old. But I think when I really realized what racing was all about and what drove racing, the Kentucky Derby, it was Seattle Slough. That's the first Derby I ever went to. I was 9 years old. My great uncle took me, and I haven't missed one since. But I just fell in love with Seattle Slough, and I've told this story a million times. So I just followed him everywhere he went, listened to everything you could about him, watched all his races. I've talked to Billy Turner. I got to spend 2 hours in a limousine one time going into Manhattan with Billy Turner. He told me Seattle Slough stories till he was sick of me. So he got sick. And so I called over to the farm. I said, man, I've never really seen him live. Can I come over? And I'd like to see him. They said, come on over. And so I got in the car, drove over. They had him all shined up, brought him out, stood him in the middle like they do showing him off. I went up and pet him on the neck. And someone grabbed my arm and wouldn't let go. Bit the hell out of me. I said, you sure don't like me as much as I like you.
You know, it's funny you bring that up, Dale, because the listener who submitted this question to us on Twitter, he actually said that his story, his favorite horse that got him hooked on the game when he was 7 years old, Seattle Slough. How about that?
Well, that's pretty good, Seattle Slough. And I'm sure that American Pharoah hooked a lot of kids when he came and won the Triple Crown or Justified. But, you know, that's when I realized what a big deal the Derby was and racing was.
Timmy?
Well, when I was growing up in Rochester, New York, I didn't know the difference between a horse and a cow. I mean, it was, I was a basketball player. And all through high school, I was a basketball player. But I kind of got hooked a little bit watching Secretariat's Triple Crown. And then 5 years later, 5 years, then late 4 years later, Seattle Slough was a Triple Crown. And then I'm in college, and I'm still playing basketball. But then I realized I wasn't going to play in the NBA. So in 1978, when Affirmed and Alidar came around, I got really, really hooked on that. And from there, I thought, well, geez, after Affirmed won the Triple Crown, I said, this Triple Crown thing, they're going to have a Triple Crown winner every year. So I just started following the races in the spring, figuring out who was going to win the Triple Crown every year. And, of course, we didn't have another one until American Pharoah. So I would say that my aborted basketball career sent me into horse racing. I became a huge fan, and I decided that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to write about horses because my major was journalism, because there was no math in journalism, and I couldn't count to 10. So I became a big fan of a Ferndon Elliott out of that rivalry, and that's how I got hooked.
Yeah, I can't relate to those stories of the 1970s, guys. I was six in 1977, and I was seven in 1978. So
yeah, you got to rub it in, don't you?
I cannot relate to those. I can relate to Easy Goer. That was the horse that got me hooked when he won the Travers in 1989. I was along the rail at Saratoga. I was hooked for life, and then Holy Bull came along, and that was it. It was over for me. I was in love with the sport.
Two good ones. I think Easy Goer hooked a lot of people into racing. He just kind of took America by storm, especially New York. I mean, they hated Pat Day outside of New York because for getting beaten the Preakness and the Kentucky Derby. And, you know, Pat Day's my really good friend, and he told me if he had one do-over race to ride, if he could go back and do one race over, it would be the Easy Goer Preakness.
Okay.
Yeah, he'd like to have that one back.
Yeah, that was, to me, personally, that's the greatest race I've ever seen. I think those were two great jockeys. They were playing each other. They both rode great races. They were two great racehorses, and Sunday Silence and Easy Goer. And I just think if anybody hadn't seen it, it's new to the game, go back and watch that. You will be hooked.
And that's when they say the Sunday Sound savaged Easy Goer, right?
Yeah. I don't think he savaged him that day, but they weren't at it back and forth pretty hard.
I thought he tried to bite him coming down the stretch.
He may have. I don't remember that part, but he may have. But there was some great jockeys and great horses, and that'll make a lot of fans if you just go watch that race.
That was such a great rivalry too, because it was East Coast, West Coast, and it was so divided. You were either Easy Goer or Sunday Silence. There was no in between.
No, and yes. I haven't seen New York behind a horse since or before that like they were Easy Goer. It was just he was New York's horse.
Yeah, I mean, to a lesser extent, maybe Funny Side, and then maybe Rachel Alexandra in the Zenyatta rivalry, maybe a little bit, but not as it wasn't anything near what Sunday Silence and Easy Goer was. That's for sure.
Yeah,
it was good stuff.
All right, one more somewhat serious topic before we dive into our Halloween topics here and have a little fun. You know, oftentimes in racing, when there is an objection or an inquiry, and this, again, came from one of our listeners here via email, officials will take a look at the stretch run, but rarely do we see officials go back to look at what happens at the start of a race. And Bill in New York submitted this question. He wants to know why it seems as if officials tend to overlook the start and not hold riders responsible for serious infractions that might occur at the beginning of races. Timmy?
Well, you know, it's a point that I sort of questioned what he was talking about, because if there's something that happens at the start, they usually look at it. I mean, a lot of infractions, they happen, you know, during the running of the race, after the start, and the start could be clean. I think that if it warrants it, they definitely do look at the start of the races, and they do hold these jockeys accountable if something happens at the start. But, I mean, for the most part, if there's something that happens in the stretch, they're not going to go back and look at the start, because nothing happened at the start to cause the infraction in the stretch.
Well, and you know, he is right about one thing. Right out of the gate, they aren't as hard on the jockeys as they are in the rest of the race. And that's because, I mean, that's a violent thing. If you think about you're taking 1,000 pounds. And you're going from 0 to 35 as fast as you can, and they're lunging out of there. And there's a lot of times the jockeys can't, you know, they don't have as much control as they do during the rest of the race. And I don't think early on you see nearly as many infractions. The pace is a little bit slower, and they're just jockeying for some position. Now, I will say, I think it was a bad call if you go back to the Breeders' Cup in California. I can't remember the horse named Baffert's horse. He wiped out half the field. Byron, yeah, I think that he did that to take an advantage. I really thought they would take him down, but they didn't. But they do give him a little leeway the first 10 jumps out of the gate or so, because it's a tough thing for a horse to do, and I think that's probably where the jockey has the least control of any time during the race. Now, I do think that they've made the worst call I ever saw in racing, I thought, was this year at Saratoga, when, Tim, you have to help me with the horse's name in the race, but the filly from the outside broke through the gate, and she had yeah. half her head outside the gate before the rest of the gates opened, and they left her as a starter.
Yeah,
there's
I
no way
that.
She should have. She there's no way she should have been considered a starter.
I remember that. I can't remember the name of the race of the horse either, but that was something that I think people are still talking about. It was a blown call for sure. There's no doubt about that. I don't know how the stewards did not take action on that one.
Right, and there's no question the horse left the gate early. Now, I think their justification was it didn't give her really an unfair advantage, but it may have hampered her when she hits her head and pushes the gate open her own self, and then the jockey's trying to take a hold of her. I don't think it was an advantage. I think it was a disadvantage and an unfair disadvantage to the people who backed her. She was 4-5 and ended up getting beat.
And back to this listener's question, I think that was the exact point. And Timmy, maybe I didn't ask it 100% correctly here, but yeah, I think that's one of the things that this listener brought up was that many of the infractions can tend to totally eliminate a horse's chances at the very beginning of a race. And the argument that, okay, horses have the whole race to recover from what happens at the start really doesn't hold a lot of water, right?
Yeah. You know, you look at the start of every race, there's probably something that goes on. And it's like, if it's something that doesn't cause a colossal problem, I mean, it's almost like traveling in basketball. They could probably call it every time they come down the floor, but they're not going to call every foul on this. If it isn't anything that's really, really egregious, maybe they're just going to let it go.
Yeah, I think there's a little more leeway leaving the gate, but I do agree. In the first turn is where I think you start seeing some infractions that could be called, maybe aren't. There's some things go on in the first turn. Out of the gate, I agree with giving them a little bit of leeway, especially in young horses. But around the first turn in a route race, you'll see sometimes some things that probably could be questioned. But, you know, another question back to the question is, why don't more jockeys call for a race to be looked at? I mean, most inquiries are jockey-related. They got the right to do it right after the race, and you don't see many jockeys clean foul for something that happens early on in the race.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And I still think the jockeys just don't get enough credit for what they do.
Not at all. Not at all. They're the greatest athletes in the world. You think about it, these guys that put and women that put their toes in the irons and they get in a squatted position, and they're completely balanced on three toes in that squatted position, going 35 miles an hour in a pack and pelted with dirt. And we expect to pace and look for holes, and then we cut them when they don't. I read a good article one time when I was a kid that talked about nobody gets really mad if a guy strikes out or misses the last second shot, because a lot of us played basketball or played football or baseball. None of us were jockeys, so we can't relate. And they're pound for pound the greatest athlete in the world.
Have you ever tried to do that? Have you ever tried to sit there on like an equisizer and balance yourself on your toes and squat down like that for about a minute and a half? Have you ever tried that?
The only time I ever tried it, I was a little bit impaired to begin with, so it wouldn't have worked.
Well, there was years ago at Saratoga when they used to have the open house at Saratoga. Someone came up with the brilliant idea to have a media race with real horses coming out of the starting gate. I mean, they were retired racehorses. I mean, I did it once, and I still think I should have my head examined for that. We actually went into the starting gate on a thoroughbred, a retired thoroughbred, and they used the starting gate. They had the starters there and all that, and they had the bell go off, and these horses took off like they were – it went back to their days of being a racehorse and they were competing again. And I've never been this terrified as I was when they broke out of the gate. We only went like an eighth of a mile, but I mean, I was just, one of the TV guys up here fell off the horse, went over backwards, broke his arm. I mean, it was the nuttiest, craziest thing the New York Racing Association ever did.
And yeah, don't,
they
don't.
Did it. They did it a couple years. I did it once, and then I retired. So I have one start in my career. I think I finished eighth.
Definitely don't try that at home. Absolutely not. All right, moving on. I want to get to these other Halloween topics here to have a little fun. We're down to about the final 5 minutes in the show. Let's go to this one. Howling Time, who Dale is going to saddle tomorrow at Churchill. We heard that call earlier in the show. Is out of that mare Werewolf. and a fantastic name for a horse running on Halloween. Give me your top three Halloween horse names of all time. Dale?
Well, I think Howling Time has to be number one. I think I didn't see that question on our list, so I can't come up with two more. I'm going to pass it off to Timmy.
How about Spooky Mulder? Remember Spooky Mulder?
I remember him.
Spooky Mulder, I do remember.
Yep.
But the obvious ones would be like Ghost Zapper, She Dares the Devil. Remember Devil is Due that ran for Alan Jerkins back in the day.
Alan Jerkins.
Yeah.
Sorry. But the ones that I came up with, there's a whole bunch of them named for pumpkin. Pumpkin Pie, Pumpkin Spice, Pumpkin Rumble, Pumpkin Express. But my three... I have Spooky Channel, one of like three grade ones at the Halloween prices of like 36-1, 7-1 for two of them. Silver Goblin, won the Razorback at Oaklawn in 94. Devil's Bag, won the Derby trial, his last race, 8-9 for Woody Stevens. But I think the all-time best one would be Native Dancer, even though, you know, that's not a Halloween name, but his nickname, the Gray Ghost, is the greatest nickname of all time. 121-22. He's my number one. The Gray Ghost, Native Dancer.
Yep.
You can tell who prepares for this show better, the best.
What are you talking about? This is all the top of my head.
Yeah, okay.
You're not buying that, huh?
No, not buying that.
Damn. Which Halloween movie character is scarier? Michael Myers, Freddy Krueger, or is there somebody else?
I'm going Michael Myers.
It's easy. Because Freddy Krueger was in your dreams. He didn't even exist.
Right. Michael was a real fella. He was a tough little guy.
Yeah, Michael Myers, I mean, he walked around. He didn't say anything. He had that big, big old knife. And you couldn't kill him.
No, nope, I mean, he's still going.
And how many times? I mean, Freddy Krueger. I mean, he was almost comical. Those little knives he had in his hand. I mean, if you stayed awake, he wasn't going to bother you.
Chucky freaked me out too.
Yeah, he's real freaky. What about Damien?
Oh yeah.
Oh, the Omen. Yeah, yeah.
That was a pretty good one.
Yeah, you don't want to mess with the devil, right?
No, you don't. Don't keep him quiet.
What about that guy at the lake? Jason, the guy with a hockey mask.
Oh yeah, yeah. I don't want to run into him either. Who's the one person in racing you wouldn't want to run into in the dark?
Tammy Fox. That's happened a few times when she was mad.
Did you run into her in the dark?
Yeah, well, she seems to track me down.
Well, I can't say that I would be afraid of anybody in the dark unless it's a mean horse. But although I wouldn't want to tick off Dale and have to run against him in the dark. I've heard some stories about him when he gets a little angry.
I only had a couple of your colleagues.
Yeah, I think Mike Maker would be one that I wouldn't want to meet just because he's so quiet normally, and he'd sneak right up on you anyway.
You wouldn't know he was there.
No.
Maybe he's like the Michael Myers of horse racing. He never speaks.
Yeah.
Right.
All right, guys, we're about out of time on this show. We're back next week, another brand-new edition. Dale will be in California at Breeders' Cup. Timmy, you'll be back here. I'll be back here. We'll get it all organized, and looking forward to talking with you guys next week on I Ask, They Answer.
All right. Talk to you later, Phil.
Sounds good. Guys. Be good on Halloween, though.
Absolutely. All right, I Ask, They Answer. Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin, you can listen to the segment every single week. And if you missed it, by the way, on our show, all you have to do is go back to the website, horseracingradio.net, and check out the podcast. I'm back to wrap it up right after this. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Okay.